Hello and welcome to Next 2.0 on WQLN NPR. Next is produced by the Public Voice Media. I'm your host, Marcus Atkinson. If you want to know more about Next 2.0, you can go to Facebook and like the page. You can follow us on Instagram at Next 2.0 Erie to keep up with upcoming show promos, events, and clips about what's coming up next for our communities and our democracy. Thank you so much for tuning in. Today, we go one-on-one with a new candidate for Erie County Council. It's another election season, not just in our Commonwealth, but in our country. And over the next couple of weeks, to include what's going on in Israel, the show that we teased you about and talking about different stances where that's concerned, we wanted to interview locally and talk to a gentleman by the name of Rock Copeland, who was the new District 3 representative for County Council here in Erie, Pennsylvania. And so, Rock, let me say, welcome to the show.
Thank you much. You're actually the first person that's gotten to introduce me in that way, so that's a pretty cool feeling to hear.
Excellent, excellent. So I got to say, you've got such a commanding name. You think about people like Rock Hudson, you know, you're Rock Copeland. That sounds like a name of a man that solves problems.
That's actually exactly where the name comes from. My grandmother thought my grandfather looked like Rock Hudson.
Is that right?
I think she's mistaken. But that was a way of having me be named for my grandfather.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's an interesting name. I actually despised it for 38 years, and now in my 39th year, it's feeling pretty good. It's great for name recognition, and if people remember your message and the name attached to it, I find that beneficial.
Got it. And so if you're listening and you are not from the Erie area, the Erie County area, I think all segments of society across this country have been affected to some extent by what we now know as Trumpism. You know, people want to imitate Trump. They want everything from his cadence to his attitude to his snarkiness to his rudeness. Things that seemed unattractive politically, he kind of unveiled and showed or proved that there's a large segment of the population out there that has some sort of appetite for this. And so America was turned upside down in many ways because it was unconventional. Giving you that lead in to say that for Erie County here, we've had a taste of that for our county executive office. And so when our county executive got elected, there were a lot of similarities there, or at least attempts to be similar to 45. And the county and the city especially has felt the effects of that. But when you look at not just that, the county council itself has been very skewed the direction of somewhat rubber stamping the behaviors of this county executive. And so with this latest election, to include the election of our guest today, Rock Copeland, the Democrats now have a 5-2 majority in Erie County Council. Now, that doesn't mean that the Democrats are encouraged to swing the opposite direction, to be the extreme version of Democrats, but hopefully what this means is we can get back to, can we make decisions that's best for the county and not necessarily just rubber stamp behaviors that we think constituents are attracted to because they've been watching Trump. And so people are excited about you getting elected, Rock, because you're one of these new voices on council that can kind of not just bring things back to center a little bit, but bring some perspective of everyday people. Let me start with, what motivated you to run in the first place? If I'm not mistaken, this is a political debut for you, correct?
To some extent, I had a run at our city council in the primary, and a lot of the work that I did there turned some heads. I think that people were surprised by my work ethic and strong desire to make a difference in the community. And it was an interesting thing when Mary had resigned, and I kind of looked around to find the leader that I would try to help elevate. That's my background. I've advocated for good governance for a long time, and I talked to a few people that I thought would be good leaders in that space, and there was not as much interest there. And I became kind of aware of some of the individuals that were interested, and I was really concerned to make sure that we had a strong voice there on council. And I felt compelled and to some extent called put in a position in my life that I neither expected or really wasn't looking for at the time. And I'm so glad that I did. I'm so glad that the committee nominated me to be on the ballot, and really glad at the outcome of the election. Because you're very right about the lead-in with the rise of Trumpism. I would counter that I'm not so sure if it's people imitating Trump or if the electorate is looking for candidates that resemble that as much as possible, that they want somebody that buys in with the authoritarian perspectives, somebody that would be okay with divorcing truth from politics. I think that that's a big part of it too. In terms of our county government, I'm very concerned. I'm very concerned about the executive that does not seem to be someone that has long-term plans built on collaboration with others and making sure that we're doing things that's best for the entire county. There's this strange political narrative from the Trumpism camp that there's somehow a difference between the city and the county. There's a concerted effort to de-invest from the county. There was a statement by Davis where he was telling somebody that the city has its own city council, its own mayor, its own taxing body, and that he's there to support the other, I think it was 38 municipalities in the area. And it's curious because it's they have taxing authority too. They have supervisors, they have council members, they have mayors. And so, you know, I see that, and it's something that I feel that we needed to step forward and speak out and frankly say no.
Yeah. Now, the Mary you made reference to was Mary Rennie. And, you know, obviously she stepped down from county council. And this was a person that I think for all intents and purposes, when you listen to interviews or you have the opportunity to talk to her, it's just kind of a frustrating environment for her with everything that was going on. As we talk about the majority that the Republicans held and the rubber stamping that was actually referred to in this Q&A with you from the Erie Times, the ringleader, for all intents and purposes of that, was a gentleman by the name of Brian Shank, who led county council. And in the same election, that candidate was defeated. It was a narrow margin, but he was defeated. And what one of the things that it made me think, and I'm asking this question to you, is I look across the country and I look at areas where women's reproductive rights, for example, were on the ballot. Democrats did really well. There seems to be an overplaying of the hand in some areas on certain topics. And when it comes to Trumpism, people are getting fatigued, you know, in some areas. And so do you think that that soft shoe approach, that rubber stamp approach, they just overplayed their hand? And even people that had supported that party were saying, okay, let's just get back to governing and not necessarily choosing sides just because.
I think that Trumpism, it does get overplayed. I think that there's concern that anyone with an R next to their name gets labeled in that way. I really think that this election was more a response to specific behaviors by individuals. You know, clearly it wasn't an abortion topic motivating
Absolutely.
A lot of people to vote against Brian Shank. I think that they were really concerned about the ethics and the truthfulness of their leaders. I really think that the county wide knew that they're being lied to. They know that they're not being told the full story. They know that the administration is not being transparent. And I think maybe worse, you know, earlier you spoke about being a voice for people. And I really think it's more important to have ears for people,
mm-hmm.
And to actually listen to the advocacy of the community and what it is that their needs are. And I think that was what was most lacking. The agenda is already written and set. They are voting. Let's say, for instance, the hot issue right now has been Gannon taking up some space at the library.
Right.
That resolution was put onto the agenda at the finance meeting during the meeting, right? It had not actually been on the agenda. People weren't really alerted to that. The meeting where they voted on that followed 4 or 5 days later, I think it was. And then, you know, even in that short duration of time, the council chambers were packed with people pouring out into the hallways. And I've always been a believer that if it's standing room only at a county council meeting or any kind of meeting like that, you probably have made a mistake.
Right.
You've done something to create a lot of concern. And the fact is that after listening to all those speakers come out and express their great concern, they weren't even willing to table the resolution just to hear more input from the community.
Right.
And I think having ears open to people, I think if a whole lot of people are motivated to come out on a weeknight to speak at a meeting, I think that deserves listening to.
Right.
And I think that especially the poll results for Chris Drexel, his message about being transparent, about listening, about hearing the community's needs, I think that really resonated with people.
Your background, you're talking about having ears for people. I like that. Your background, talk about Little Rock. Where were you born? You know, how'd you come up? Give us some of your backstory.
Yeah, I was born in a little, or not really a little town, in Northwest Indiana, East Chicago, kind of borders the Gary area. My grandfather was a Methodist minister in that community, and then grew up in a small town about 20 minutes south of there, right about where the metropolitan region of the city of Chicago starts. You know, you look north and you see the glow of the city, and the south is cornfields. So it was a pretty interesting community to grow up in. It's kind of like analogous to Albion is to Erie. You have a lot of the benefits of being close to a metro region and like this, and then also kind of a small town feel. I grew up there. I moved to Chicago for a short time in my 20s. It was a nice place to be young and single. Met my future wife, and we decided when we had kids that we were going to relocate to Erie. It's kind of funny because we always came and visit. I've been coming to Erie for 15 years, and I would tell my now ex-wife, I would tell her all the time, let's just move to Erie. Let's just go. Like, we both love it there. There's family there. And she really pushed back because she felt like she didn't have the economic opportunity. And that's the story of so many people that have relocated from Erie. But, you know, she was alerted to a job opening that she was considering applying for and told me about it that night. Within 30 seconds, we decided to move to Erie. And within a month, we were relocated.
Right.
You know, that was 8 years ago now, and it's just been wonderful since. And it's kind of interesting too, because having gone through a divorce 5 years ago, a big part of my healing process and what made me feel whole again was being more involved in the community, being active and advocating, being involved in local politics, a place that lives can actually be beneficially changed. You know, people get all excited for a presidential election and they don't realize.
And it sounds like you discovered the true magic of working or giving yourself to community or volunteering. And that true magic is the fact that as you are giving to others, it replenishes and renews your own spirit. It builds your own spirit up. And I've heard so many stories, myself included, where people give of themselves because there's something going on in their lives that, you know, let me focus on someone else. And they themselves become built up by it. I asked you about your background because you talked about having ears for people. And I'm looking at the map of District 3. It's kind of like Councilman Horton's map. It's a very, very diverse district you have here.
I think that they're all intentionally diversified in that way. I know that there's been a lot of advocacy to have a city-only district, one of the three districts that touch the city to be just the city. I think it's pretty interesting. It I think tempers the possibility of any one party having crazy control, just given that, there's this 25% of the voters in Mill Creek, an area that's roughly 49% Democrat. It changes the nature of the people that get elected to those positions, because they're listening to those communities and to a diverse group of people.
I mean, you're looking at Little Italy, Federal Hill, and the old French Road area, the Washington Avenue, the Green Garden area, Erie High. I mean, you've got a just a nice blend of different kinds of people in your district. So it's refreshing to hear you talk about listening, because certainly these voices are not going to be monolithic, nor should they be. And to have someone say, "Hey, I'm listening, and what's good for us as a community based upon what I'm hearing," is very important. I referenced the Q&A that you did with Go Erie for Times News, and one of the questions that it hit on was something I wanted to inquire about myself. ARP funds. Give us your take on, because there's such a huge misconception. I go about the community and I'll hear people ask questions about, ARP funds, and oftentimes they don't even know the exact term. They're just talking about, these COVID dollars that came in, and they assume that this group got it and that group got it, and they're shocked to figure out or find out how many groups that are doing great work haven't accessed the dime of that money. Give us your take from a county perspective of how that played out in your opinion, what you wish would have happened, and what you're hoping for going forward.
I think it cannot be overstated just how historic the magnitude of investment from the federal government. It absolutely insane opportunity that we haven't seen since the New Deal. I mean, truly a massive investment into communities. And I think that the biggest tragedy is how many communities have squandered that opportunity. The ARP dollars were supposed to be intended to help people most hurt by COVID. It was, to make sure that people were stable, that we didn't have, Great Depression food lines, on homelessness and despair. In a time that was really scary for everyone. I mean, I remember reflecting on trying to buy a house, and I thought that I might have been kind of insane to consider buying a house during the middle of, or rather the very beginning of COVID, because we didn't really know what it was going to look like. My own employer slashed my pay by 25% for a short period of time because they didn't know what was going to happen. And so I really do think that it's a tragedy, particularly at the county, with the reprogramming of a lot of those dollars getting redirected, to see the DEI get defunded by 75%, roughly, to see a lot of those dollars that should have gone to the communities most impacted and get redirected to a college that has billions in their endowment, another 1.5 going to another university. And it's kind of interesting too, because a lot of these redirected funds, if you give $1.5 million to a project that costs $25 million, and then say, "This is my win. Look at this great thing that I built." It's like putting a quarter in a Salvation Army, where they're ringing the bells and saying that you cured homelessness. And so I think a lot of these dollars that could have been used to really dramatically improve lives could have been really leveraged to address the major poverty issues that we have, not just in the city, but all over the county.
Right.
I just really feel like it's just squandered opportunities. Some of these allocations, it feels like people have like a wish list of things of like, oh, wouldn't that be nice? And now suddenly we're able to just pay for those things. But I just don't believe that we did it with the intent that those dollars were for. And the biggest fear is if they were not in the intent of the bill, is there an opportunity that the Fed might say, hey, these were misallocated and we want to claw back these funds?
Good question.
That's possible. That's possible. I talked to a lot of people, and that's one of their biggest fears, that $5 million for Project Resolve could end up coming out of the county. It's a concern.
Right. Is that, talk to us about your big, listening to people, obviously that's at the forefront, but in terms of the issues, what was one of, if not the issue, that just tugged at your gut? And you said, I have to have a seat at the table to speak into that issue in particular. Is there one issue that just seemed to keep you up at night more than the others?
It's an interesting question. I would have to be a little bit generalist here,
Okay.
because I think the issue is a repetitive behavior. There's a large movement to privatize a lot of the institutions in our county government that do the greatest good. You have any kind of asset like the county farm out Fairview Girard that they were trying to turn into an industrial park. You have some of the issues with the space in the library. You have a lot of rumbles about wanting to privatize Pleasant Ridge. People don't realize how much of the community good is taken care of at the county level. And there's such a push that you see it at the federal level, the state level, and local. There's such a push that people seem to think that any institution that takes dollars and contributes them directly to the public good, public education, public health, that those dollars would be better utilized if they went through the hands of a business or a billionaire or a millionaire first. And I see that in our county government, and it causes great concern. When you don't have adequate funding in OCY, kids get hurt. And it takes longer to get to them. It takes longer to get them placed in a safe place. When you don't invest enough in your health department, people die. And even, with the investment in the courts, DA, even something like investing in the sheriff's department. I mean, these are people that wear a firearm just like any law enforcement officer going out and in the community, and their lives are no less on the line than anyone else, and yet we don't seem to feel that they're worth more than $18 an hour. I think that that's a problem. When I was on the campaign trail, one of the things that really radically shifted was listening to people that work at the county, listening to people that in their jobs were advocating for others and lost their employment. Listening to people at the library having serious concerns over the removal of a pride display. And they were muzzled. They were told that they're not allowed to talk about that, even if it's an issue that's very close to their heart. There's a lot of people at the county that feel that their social media is being watched and that they can't express themselves because any, and that was one of the biggest issues that when I started running in, that really woke me up, and I really became very concerned for the people, the rank and file nonpartisan employees, the ones that have been there for 25 years through many, many executives. and to hear their great concern and hear that they feel that their workplace is toxic, that could have decades of repercussions. So, I mean, that was one thing that really hit my heart.
You talk about the representation of the different voices that were crying out about censorship with the library at the library, and trying not to trying to sequester, certain lives and lifestyles of some of our citizens. And then you also talked about people packing out the chamber from time to time to voice their opinions. And as you pointed out, oftentimes more than not, because somebody got something wrong. It always strikes me that when it comes to taxpayer dollars, be it gay or straight, black or white, transgender, cis, whatever your lifestyle is, whoever you are, they still take tax dollars from you. And so when it's tax dollars at work and you start picking and choosing what voices to elevate over others, people should be crying out. Now, wait a minute. If that's how you feel, take less of my money then. If my experience means a little less, there's been so many fires to put out. There's been so much infighting. Kathy Dahl Kemper, whether you liked it or whether you liked her or not personally, did lament the notion of us versus them that she saw at play with city and county. And then when you see all of the fights, the lawsuits, the bickering, the protests, it's been a lot going on under this particular county executive. In this new role, because especially seeing that you have such a diverse district, how do you become an individual ambassador for we are all in this together? And so obviously you'll take to the chambers for your meetings. But as you're going about and you're meeting people and you're the proverbial shaking hands and kissing babies, how will you be that voice of we're all in this together and we all have value? Because the divisive tone, if you will, in community can seem overwhelming at times, and it seems like it needs to be reeled in. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's interesting because I've touched on this a lot. You know, if somebody from Fairview takes a drive several hours away, let's say Akron, and somebody asks them where they're from, do they say Fairview? Do they say Mill Creek? Do they say Northeast? No, we all say Erie. When I lived in Northeast for a short period, I would drive somewhere and they'd ask me where I'm from. I'd say Erie. And I think that there really is a regional identity that people identify, particularly all of us with our closeness with the lake. But there is a regional identity here, and all of these communities are part of that really unique fabric. Because this is a really unique area. I've lived other places. This is a wonderful area. I think that there has been a political advantage everywhere to divide, to demonize cities, demonize even things like we talked about the DEI. I mean, there was a concentrated effort to create a narrative that this was a misappropriation of dollars and that they weren't being spent wisely. And why? Because most of those dollars ended up getting spent in the city. And I really think it's important to collaborate, to put yourself in those other communities. I represent largely the west side of the city and a sliver of Mill Creek. But I think people in Corry should expect to see me. And then people in Albion should expect to see me. And it's not about the city. It's not about rural. It's about all of us. And I think that it's a bigger lift than just one person to deliver a narrative or create a narrative of that community. And it's not just me, but when we have leaders, elected leaders, that are driving that point home, that this is about all of us. You know, if Welch's goes down in Northeast, that's a problem in the city
It
too.
is.
Pleasant Ridge, if that gets privatized, that affects all of us. And I think when you're talking holistically and not creating that divide as an elected leader, I think that's part of it. But I also think that people need to be talking more about it. When one of the things that I just absolutely fell in love with and just made me feel so energized is I really started to pick up on a community of people in the area that just loved their city, their region, and I could see them getting involved and being more and more motivated. There's a local podcast, Idiotville, that they would have all of these people on and talk about just how much they love the city and what they're doing to contribute and the vision that they have for this area. And I think that when I heard that, I just want to be a part of that. I want to be a part of making this area better. And I think that the more you amplify that message everywhere that you go, I think that that's what starts a movement.
You know, I've had the privilege of being involved with youth development for a number of years here in Erie. And I've done a lot of work with students in the city. I've done my fair share of work with students in the county. And listening to both sets of kids, it was always fascinating that, one, kids are kids. And all of us have our stuff, man, right? Your stuff may not look like mine, it may not feel like mine, but it's stuff nonetheless. And when you think about the rural poor, for a time, they were being overlooked. And, being from the inner city, and you want to address poverty in the hood, if you will, but you forget that poverty is poverty is poverty. And when people were starving or impoverished in the county, for a time, it felt like it was the forgotten. And we saw the results of that in many elections. But it goes to your point of, one, we're all in this together, but as you pointed out also, it can't be just one person. But I do believe in the power of one person saying and doing the things that you're talking about saying and doing. Because I think people pick up on it and it starts to become a new mantra unto itself, And people are going to bat for each other in these ways in the city and the county. This is not a narrative that everyone accepts. Somebody just has to carry the banner for it in these official capacities. That the issue on a business front, the issue that they brought up for you in this article again that grinds my gears, to quote Peter Griffin. Is this airport? What is your take on Erie's international, and I'm throwing up air quotes when I say international, Erie's international airport? What can we do to strengthen that thing? Because from a commerce perspective, it just isn't very conducive to business, commerce, and making people want to be a part of this community if they're trying to make money. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I've been having conversations about the airport a lot lately. And just like we were talking about earlier, my focus has been keeping my ears open. If anyone thinks that every elected official is a subject matter in every area, they're going to find that they're mistaken. I have a couple of concerns. I know that they've been going around talking about the Fly Erie Fund. There's been presentations that have already been given to the city, been given to ECRA, and a couple of other places. They're looking for funding for this fund to help offset the costs for a airline to make it more economically viable for them to exist here. I'm not entirely sold on that idea just yet, although I did find myself a little bit surprised that I think that there's some buy-in from the city on some contributions. I'm a little bit worried about the ask from the airport in terms of the portion of their reserves. There's a lot of tendency to see a pile of cash and think, oh, well, this solves our problems. We'll just spend it in just the same way that we've done last year with our county budget. Those reserves matter. Having financial solvency matters. having money set aside that helps improve your bond rating, so that when you do need to borrow for a bigger project, that you are able to do so at a lower cost. These are important things. I have in mind to have some conversations with some of the people involved with that. I think it's really important for people to understand, if we're talking about economic development, the airport is central. Businesses like Erie Insurance do not enjoy having to have additional logistical thinking if they're going to fly in salesmen from around the country. And
Exactly.
having access to transport like that is essential. But really, that's something where I feel like I need to keep my ears open and continue to keep my ears open and listen to subject matter experts. Really look at what we're going to do. My fear, though, is, let's say the city of Erie decides to kick in some arbitrary number. I don't know, 30 cents per person, whatever the arbitrary number is for their city. Is Union City going to follow suit? Is Albion going to follow suit? Is Northeast going to contribute? And my fear is that we would end up subsidizing some of these flights out of the airport, out of a very small, select few communities, likely Erie and Mill Creek, and not get the buy-in elsewhere. And I think that that's where they would end with some amount of failure.
Are there areas, because I know that one of the things that City Council, for example, Chuck Nelson, Chuck is very good about trying to figure out what are best practices in other areas and does it fit in Erie? Is it worth a look? And I think a lot of people do that. That seems to be something that he leans into a bit more often. Are there best practices in other places that you've seen, read about, or heard about? That now that you're in this position, you're saying to yourself, I'd like to look into whether or not that model would work in Erie. Do you have anything like that floating around in your head?
It's funny that you bring up Chuck around the topic because Chuck and I spend a great deal of time talking. I like to get an idea where his head is at because I have found historically it's in a very good place. And I know that he has looked at some of the best practices in other areas. And he and I have had those conversations. It's kind of interesting. There's a big difference between campaigning and governance.
Amen.
And for a long time, my head had been very solely square into campaigning. And the last 48 hours have been engaging in lots of conversations to get to the governance. And so I have not put in the depth of time in that topic to speak at length about it in a comfortable way. I'm not one that likes to talk about something if they don't feel 100% well versed on it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can appreciate that. I know that this topic and many others, I like the idea of figuring out, because there's nothing new under the sun. The idea of figuring out what's been working elsewhere. We seem to apply that to a lot of things, and I think it's wise, and the fact that you are at least saying, hey, let's inspect some of these methods and learn more and see what can be applied to Erie is a good thing. In terms of overall takeaways, now you're still trying to wrap your head around the fact that the election is over and you're about to actually start serving. What do you want people to know about you as you come into it? You've given us some of those things already to think about. But what should they keep in mind as they see you in chamber for the first few times and in the act of actually making decisions for county residents?
I really heartfelt want people to know that I want to be active and engaged in the community. I want people to call me. I mean, I've put my phone number all over the face of the earth. My email is super easy to remember. It's rock@rockcopeland.com. I mean, can't get easier than that. If people see me in the community and want to grab my ear, and talk about something really dear to them. I just had a Facebook message a couple hours ago. A citizen was advocating for some issues at the zoo. And I want people to know that when I hear them, that I truly hear them, that I internalize that, I have a habit of making other people's issues close personal issues of mine. I empathize me at times maybe too deeply. Can't take on everybody's biggest concerns in life, but I mean that's something I really believe in. And when Chris and I have been talking about transparency all this election cycle, it's because we mean it. We want to be people that are approachable. I want people to let me know when they think I'm wrong. I just was messaging a local community advocate that often speaks at council meetings, and he offered his congratulations. I said, "Thank you. I appreciate it. I want you to make sure that you keep my butt in line if you think I'm erring, because I want people to engage me. I want them to come up after a council meeting or before and have discussions." That I think that it's a dangerous thing when people rely only on their intuition and their own mind for creating plans and then trying to unilaterally force them through. I think that listening to people is, and I hope I'm not repeating myself too much, but I think that's paramount. And what should people expect? They should expect that I'm there to be, I'm there to be engaged.
You brought up your conversations with Chuck Nelson, and in closing, how much will you make it a practice to reach across the, to kind of reach across the up the street, if you will, to just bend the ear of people that are serving at a city level, city council, school board, people that are serving in the city? How much will you make those conversations happen?
I think it's really important, like extremely important. The county is only one taxing body. There are at least two, depending on how you look at it, because there's so many other communities. There's actually a lot of taxing bodies, but there's the city and the school board. And I think it's really important. I've been engaged, maybe just out of my own, what's the word? Obsession of making sure that I know what's going on and trying to be an advocate. And I know many of those people extremely well, and I want to make it a point to work together. We should be working together regionally, not just the city and the county, but a coalition of governments working to make sure that we're solving our problems together. I think the most dangerous practice of the executive has been trying to go it alone. We have a plan for economic development in Infinite Erie, and he made a big show of walking away from that in favor of his plan. And that collaboration, the exchange of ideas, letting each other know where we are on policy and policy creation is super important. There's a lot. It's just from the simple fact that there's a lot of really great minds there, and to be having those conversations and working together and making sure we're on the same page. You listen to the school board and they say, "Hey, what's going on with assessments? The county hasn't done an assessment for a very long time. We're very near wanting to maybe take legal action to make sure there's an assessment that happens." Our problems are mutual, and the caring is mutual, and I think it's really important.
Rock Copeland, thank you so much for coming on and taking time to just kind of express yourself. Let us see how you think, how you tick, who you are. I know it's been very insightful for me. This is my first opportunity to really get a chance to sit down and talk to you. And I think you're one of the more intriguing persons to kind of arrive on a political scene here. You seem like an everyday person, and that unto itself is refreshing. So thank you so much for offering to serve and for coming on to talk to our audience about that service.
I really appreciate the time.
All right. Well, that's it for our show today. Tune in next time for more discussion and analysis with local and national guests. Remember that Next 2.0 streams on Fridays on all major podcast platforms and the fourth Sunday of the month at 4 p.m. on WQLN NPR. That is 91.3 FM. I'm Marcus Atkinson. Come and join us next time so that you can hear about what's next for our communities and our democracy at large. Peace.